Live from the studios of Town Square Media in Northfield, it's Hurley in the Morning on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Thank you very much. It's 5 minutes past the hour. I am very pleased to report that this is Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and we have a wonderful guest this half hour, Dr. Alan Galley, cardiologist, and he'll be talking about a very important topic, keeping your cholesterol under control. Know your numbers. It's so important, and we have a lot of content that we're going to be sharing. Let me just take a moment to tell you a little bit about our distinguished guest, Dr. Alan Galley, cardiologist, board certified in cardiovascular disease, nuclear cardiology, and adult echocardiography. Dr. Galley earned his medical degree at Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine in Pennsylvania after medical school. Dr. Galley completed his fellowship in cardiology at Rowan University School of Osteopathic Medicine in Stratford, New Jersey. Dr. Galley's special interests include primary prevention, nuclear medicine, diagnosing and treating heart disease, and consumer technologies in diagnosing cardiac disorders. He has participated in many clinical research projects. In terms of professional accomplishments, I'll name one. There are many. Fellow of the American College of Cardiology, Specialty Training Cardiology, Rowan University School of Osteopathic Medicine. And we welcome our distinguished doctor to the program. Sir, welcome. Great to be with you this morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It is a pleasure. Doctor, if you would, when it comes to heart health, and we're talking, and I've been promoting you a bunch all morning long, what's important to know in terms of what are the numbers that we're talking about?
Well, so you mentioned one of them already is cholesterol, and that's very important. And that's one number, or two numbers, actually, we should know early on in our adulthood and even possibly childhood, too. Some of the other numbers that we focus on, too, is sugars or glucose. Blood pressure, very important. And body mass index, or BMI. And these numbers help us also look at other calculations or risk calculators. And all this is to hopefully determine if people need treatment or to help prevent cardiovascular disease, which is still, a big problem today.
And we've come such a long way. I remember it doesn't seem like that long ago, but I'm sure now it is quite a number of years ago, where there was just one number. If your cholesterol was below that number, I can't even remember, 180 or whatever it was, if you were below that number, yeah, you're great. You're good to go. But then again, your high cholesterol, your good cholesterol might be low, your bad cholesterol might be high, and so we've gotten much more definitive about it, and we break it down now. If we're talking just cholesterol, we break it down in terms of good, bad, and even if you have a total number that in days gone by was quote-unquote good enough or just fine, we're looking at things a lot differently now. So let's break down the numbers when we do the blood test. Talk about the different numbers.
Sure. So like you said, total cholesterol. I have patients that come to me and say, my total cholesterol is under 200. I'm good. Well, that's just one part of it. And actually, total cholesterol is actually made up of the good cholesterol, which is your HDL, the bad cholesterol, which is the LDL, and a percentage of your triglycerides, which is the fatty fat. So when you have all those numbers, that's how you get the total cholesterol. And once you have those numbers, the few things that I point out is, all right, so let's talk about at least adults. If I have an adult, say, over the age of 30, and they have a history of heart disease in the family, and that LDL is persistently above 160, well, that's a reason to really start them on medication to lower that. One thing I should emphasize first, though, however, is no matter what your numbers are, no matter how old you are, we always emphasize lifestyle changes, exercise, and diet. And that's the most important thing that somebody can do for themselves. And that's pretty much for any type of disorder or ailments. But then when we go back to the numbers, the other number I like to point out of the LDL is regardless of age, if it's above 190, that's more of a familial or genetic issue, and that has to be treated. And then that should open up more questioning into, your children or brothers and sisters or family members to get tested sooner than later. So then when you get those numbers, depending on the person's age or what their history is, that's when we use those risk calculators. And those risk calculators can give us a percentage of, all right, well, right now, based on today, with these numbers, you're considered a low risk in the next 10 years, borderline risk, intermediate, or high. And then that's how we can determine further treatment. The other factor is, you know, you have to look at the patient. You know, when I see a patient in the office, it's not just me telling the patient, all right, here's a script or here's this, go do this, and I'll see you later. And this is important because every patient's different. And, you know, depending on the age, depending on what their history is, really determines what treatment we do. If I have a person over the age of 75 with really not a lot of risk factors, and I do have a lot of those patients, you know, then we have to have a discussion, what is the risk and benefit of starting medication at that age for their cardiovascular health? But overall, some numbers I'd like to point out again is just the LDL above 190 is very important, really, really important to treat that, and above 160. When we talk about triglycerides, triglycerides are also a risk-enhancing factor. And, you know, when I see patients, their LDL may be good, their total cholesterol may be under range, but if the triglycerides are above 175 persistently, that's also a risk-enhancing factor for heart disease, especially when the LDL is low. Sorry, excuse me, when the HDL is low. So if you have a high triglyceride and a low HDL, which is a good cholesterol, that's another thing we look at to say, all right, well, we got to pay a little more attention here. You know, what are you doing in your lifestyle? You know, and then as far as triglycerides, depending on what that number is, there's other things we can do to treat that. Again, lifestyle, diet changes first.
Such an important narrative and breakdown that you just shared, Dr. Galley, because sometimes, and I think even still, sometimes people think if their total cholesterol number is good, they're good to go, nothing to worry about. But as you break down very, very well, if your good cholesterol is low, your bad cholesterol is high, you broke down what the triglyceride over 175 would mean. So the ratio is really important, isn't it?
Correct. And let me just state again that triglyceride over 175 is that what concerns me, but over 150 is abnormal. So still, we lower that number, the better. And when you just mentioned the ratio, there's other. So these four numbers, there's so many ways to look at them. And what we can also look at is I look at the total cholesterol to HDL ratio. When that's over 4, that's abnormal. The other number I look at is also a non-HDL, which is your total minus your HDL. And these two numbers also help further or predict coronary heart disease risk, actually more than the LDL number itself. So like you said, we've come a long way in dissecting these numbers and how to further risk stratify patients.
How do you know, and I'm not giving you a fair question, but it's just a general question, how do you know whether it's something that a patient can handle maybe by making some changes, some diet changes and things, versus making a recommendation that someone go on some type of whatever, statin or whatever would be recommended? How do you know which course to take?
So it's a good question. So let me put a simple thing out there. If a patient comes to me already diagnosed with diabetes or heart disease and they're not on a cholesterol medication, that's a no-brainer. Mm. But what makes it more challenging is the people that don't have much history. And people that are young and a lot of people don't want to take medicine, obviously, if they don't have to. So I look at those numbers, and when I go back to the risk calculator, if somebody's intermediate risk or borderline and they're young, I kind of want to investigate that further. So there are more tools in my hand that I can use. And one tool that I use is actually an imaging test called the coronary artery calcium score. And those are really good to use in intermediate risk patients to further risk stratify whether or not they need cholesterol medication or even a baby aspirin for primary prevention. So to go back to your question, there are other things that we can do to further risk stratify to see if doing more aggressive treatment other than just diet and lifestyle would be beneficial.
And I do want to cover one thing, because I think if we don't do it now, we're going on to so many other important things, we might not come back to this. For people who have been adverse to going on a prescription medication to help with this situation because they fear for side effects and things like that, what can you say relative to that? The risk, I guess the reality of the dangers of not taking it versus your concern about some side effect or something.
So basically, usually in these situations, the benefit outweighs the risk, especially if you're doing the right risk tool and looking at the patients, especially the family history, and you know if they're smokers and their current history. So usually the benefit outweighs the risk. You know, there is something. So have you ever heard of the placebo effect?
Yes.
Well, there's something called the nocebo effect, and this has actually been stated in statin therapy or cholesterol medication therapy, where a patient hears from their friend, their family member, their wife, their spouse, whoever, that if I take this medicine, I know I'm going to get muscle pain or muscle aches. So I tell patients, so look, you already have a bad thinking of this medication. Based on what I know of you, it's worth at least give it a try. If you have symptoms, we change it. We investigate it further. We try something different. It's basically trial and error in the beginning. And again, most of the time I'll have patients try lifestyle changes, diet therapies. Some of them want to try over-the-counter medications. And I let them do that as far as, you know, to see how their numbers go, try to work with the patient. Remember, because it's shared decision-making. But end of the day, what really only helps lowering these numbers is lifestyle changes, diet, and statins, if indicated. And there are other medication that we can use to help these numbers, but only if indicated.
We only take one break during Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. We're going to take it right now. We'll be back in about a little over 3 minutes with a very distinguished doctor, Dr. Alan Galley, a cardiologist. He sees patients in Manahawkin, so right here in our wheelhouse, right here in our marketplace. You can make an appointment with Dr. Galley by calling 609-836-6602. He is awesome. 609-836-6602. You can also make an appointment online with Dr. Galley at demanddeborah.org. The program topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is keeping your cholesterol under control, the importance of knowing your numbers. When we come back, another that I think is really important, glucose. We're going to talk about that next.
Hurley in the Morning, WPG Talk Radio 95.5, and on the WPG Talk Radio app. /WOW. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. For complete contest rules, visit WPGTalkRadio.com.
It is my privilege to present Dr. Alan Galley, a cardiologist. He sees patients in Manahawkin. You can schedule an appointment with Dr. Galley by calling 609-836-6602. You can also make an appointment online with Dr. Galley at demanddeborah.org. That's G-H-A-L-Y at demanddeborah.org. The program topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is keeping your cholesterol under control, the importance of knowing your numbers. Dr. Galley, I also think this is a big one as well, glucose. What can you say relative to glucose? What does this have to do with heart health, and what should we be looking for? And also, if you don't mind, if I could also throw in there, because I even know myself, I stay on top of all these things because I want to, and many times I'll go in there and I'll get that test done, and I will not have fasted. I think they do put on it that this was a non-fasting result. I've been very fortunate even with whatever I've had in the morning, and I usually will go right over after doing the program right around, you know, 10:15, 10:30-ish right after we get done. And I just take that test even though I had a breakfast at about 4 o'clock this morning, and away I go. And my number's always been fine. Does it matter if we have fasted or if we have had something to eat hours before a glucose test?
Yes. So, So first of all, so glucose is very important. So why is it important? Because number one is it can indicate that we have either diabetes or pre-diabetes. And again, diabetes is coronary risk equivalent. And if we have, if we're going towards that direction, if our body is going towards that direction, we want to attack that early on. Now, when we look at the glucose, you're right. Typically, we tell patients to fast at least 8 hours before with no caloric intake. So a normal level is less than 100. Now, I remember, and I've been practicing now, you know, as a attending for about 6 years almost, but I remember when I was in training, that number was 120.
Wow.
And they've changed that number over the years, and now it's less than 100 as normal fasting. Now, but if you go and have your breakfast like you did at 4 o'clock in the morning, if you have an impaired fasting glucose if you have impaired glucose over 126, that could be a sign as well something's going on.
But if you've eaten, say, and I'm not just trying to make this personal, and the more I think about it, I'm getting pretty close to 8 hours as it goes. But if I've eaten at around 4 or 4:30, and then I'm having the blood work drawn at 10:30, 11-ish by the time I would get in, I'm pretty close to that. I'm not there, but I'm pretty close to that 8 hours. And if you're always under the 100 and even comfortably under the 100 and you've actually had something to eat, is that a good sign?
It is a good sign because, again, when you eat, your sugar levels are certain hours, like 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours after you eat should be a certain number. But patients like yourself, what I usually do, though, in those patients where if I'm a little worried, like let's say you get the number back, it's like 101, 102, and you have appropriate, you take appropriate history and they have certain history, you can check at hemoglobin A1C. And that is not fasting. And that tells you at least your average sugar is over the past 3 months. There are other type of tests you can do, and usually the family doctor may do this. There's like glucose tolerance tests where you go in, you drink a glucose load of liquid, and they check your, that's exactly what they do. They check your sugar 2 hours after to see what that number is. And if that number is elevated, then they may be a sign of something going on as far as maybe early diabetes, diabetes. But the simplest test really is a hemoglobin A1C. And that number between 5.7 and 6.4 is pre-diabetes. And then over 6.5 is considered diabetes.
Now, if you're going with the first number that you see when you get your blood results back and your glucose is under 100, is anything under 100 is just, there you go, that's good, you're under 100, you're good to go? Because obviously, like with cholesterol, there's good number, good cholesterol, there's bad cholesterol. With glucose, if you're under 100, is that's the number and that's it?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, yes. But the problem is, I don't like telling people, so to answer your question, yes. But I don't want people to think that, all right, well, if I'm having my ice cream and I'm having this, you know, burger or fries, and so far my sugars are normal in the morning, I'm good to go. No, because eventually they're not going to be normal.
There you go.
So that is a normal value, yes, but you don't want to have a false security to saying that I can continue my lifestyle the way it is if it's unhealthy.
How best to keep within the range of being healthy?
Well, I mean, now you're talking about maybe modify risk factors, right?
Yeah.
So number one, making sure your diet is rich in fruits, vegetables, low carbohydrates, low trans fat. What I tell my patients, look, if it's somebody's birthday or your special occasion, you're allowed to have indulge now and then, but it shouldn't be every day. Also exercising, important part of exercising in lowering your cholesterol and glucose is achieving aerobic activity, you know, at least, preferably at least 45 minutes a day, you know, 5 to 7 days a week, which is really aggressive, but even 30 minutes a day walking 5 to 7 days a week is beneficial, and that would help lower your sugar and your cholesterol. Obviously, you know, getting to a little bit of the smoking part, but you know, smoking is not good for us, and especially now with vaping too, that's not good for us either. But that's a side discussion. But just kind of living that healthy lifestyle, diet, and physical activity, because inactivity is not good for our sugars. You're going to increase your risk of pre-diabetes, diabetes, and high cholesterol.
Let me send a shout-out to one of your patients. I'm not violating HIPAA if I just say Jimmy just wrote me and said that you are his doctor, And that you are, let me read the exact words. It was very, very kind, because I have another listener comment that came in. Give me one second here. On top of his came another one. Dr. G is my doc, nicest guy on the planet, and very smart. How nice is that? Take him on the road with you. He needs to introduce you everywhere you go. I think that's fantastic. I want to go to blood pressure because all these things keep changing. And I basically, my whole adult life, when I started paying attention to these kinds of things, would hear, hey, anything under like 120 over 80, and that's normal. But I want to break it down. Is that normal? Has that changed? And is there a difference between men and women?
So the 120 over 80 has been that kind of gold standard that we look for normal blood pressures. That hasn't changed. But what has changed over the recent years is the targets in how we look at blood pressure. So I remember when I first started my training, if I remember correctly, I think like over 140, we thought was really abnormal. That's when we started treating. And even in older individuals, we said we allowed the blood pressure to go up to 150 and so on to say, oh, that's okay, you're older, we can let the blood pressure go that high. But things have changed. So we started at 120 over 80. And then if the top number is 120 to 129, that's considered elevated. 130 to 139, that's what we call stage one high blood pressure. And then 140, at least 140 or above, stage two. You know, as far as male and female, we treat them the same. Well, I think what matters is, again, the patient's history, if they have kidney disease or diabetes or heart disease. Some of the targets I try to approach is, you know, if I have somebody that comes in and the blood pressure is really high, you know, depending what that number is, we will try to lower that to a certain goal. Now, the one thing I want to mention, though, is blood pressure, they call it also the silent killer. Why? Most people don't realize that their blood pressure is high. They have no symptoms. I have patients that come to my office for the first time, their blood pressure is 180 over 90, and they feel totally fine.
Wow.
You know, they tell me, oh, with the drive over here, they tell me, you know, I'm nervous being here. I said, okay, fine, but and I check it multiple times throughout the visit, and it's still elevated. So those patients really need treatment, you know, that day. We start them on treatment. But to go back to targets, you know, my first goal is, you know, is to get that top number to 140, and then depending on their history, down to 130. Now, again, I mentioned to you shared decision-making and also look at the patient, because the one issue that I run to myself is we end up treating numbers. And remember, patients are not numbers, they're people, mm-hmm. and they feel things. And you have to understand what the patient's feeling, whether it's a side effect from medication or if you're driving the blood pressure too low. So, for example, I have one patient, older individual, where got his numbers perfect, 125, like over like 70 and change. And I was so happy with myself. Patient was feeling kind of run down, fatigued. And I said, well, give it time, let you adjust to the medication. Then, you know, after a month or two, still wasn't feeling well, we backed off the medication, got him back up to like the one high 130s, 140s, and he felt great. So sometimes you have to look at the patient too. You don't want to just treat numbers.
Yeah.
But those are the overall, you know, kind of targets that I try to reach, but you have to understand the history of the patient too.
So interesting to hear you talk about this, because you brought up the fact that with hypertension, it can be a silent killer, because you don't even know that you have high blood pressure because you feel fine. Probably, obviously, you're not, but you don't know you're not. But if you have low blood pressure, and I don't have that, so tell me if I'm right when I say this, that low blood pressure, you might stand up quickly after sitting down, and you could feel faint or pass out even. So low blood pressure actually presents with symptoms, doesn't it?
It does, and that's what makes, you know, treating blood pressure challenging sometimes. And the other thing is when we treat blood pressure, especially medication, most patients will eventually require more than one agent. So one thing you have to tell patients is you have to really, you know, watch your fluid intake, make sure you stay hydrated, especially in the hot summer months, because most patients take their medication, they go out, they do yard work, they don't stay hydrated, they're on the ground, they stand up quickly, and like you just said, they can almost pass out.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to really focus on not only what you're doing in your personal life between fluid intake, alcohol intake. If someone drinks too much alcohol beverages, you know, I tell them to limit that as much as they can. And that can affect blood pressure, and that can also dehydrate you. So really you have to look at not just the numbers, but what the patient is doing in their current lifestyle.
I don't want it to be true, but we're in our two-minute drill. I want to squeeze in as much as we can. When cholesterol and triglycerides are out of the desired range, are there physical symptoms, or would you only know if you had blood work done?
So yes and no. I mean, when the cholesterol is very, very high, like in the ones I was telling you with the, like, genetic issue, there can be some skin manifestations, deposits on our skins, around the eyes, stuff like that. But not, there's not much symptoms. Triglycerides, if they're very, very, very high, can sometimes put patients at risk for pancreatitis or abdominal pain. But again, you really got to know your numbers, because most of the time there are not a lot of manifestations of these numbers.
Can I ask you for one more minute to cover one more number? You got a minute?
Sure.
Appreciate your time, because I don't want to. I know you have a busy day. This, I think, is really important, and I'm glad that you're going to stretch for a minute or so to address this one, because as you know, and I think a lot of our listeners know, a number of years ago, the body mass index, the numbers all changed. And yesterday, and I mean years ago, you were fine. Today, the new numbers came out, and you were obese. So this shocked a lot of people to their core. In terms of body mass index, it's another number to know. What do we want to know about it?
So the body mass index is basically your weight divided by your height. And it basically provides a better estimate of total body fat compared to body weight alone. If your body mass index, well, first of all, normal is 18.5 to 24.9. But if it's between 25 and 29.9, you're considered overweight. And then that number between 25 and 29.9 is the start of when we start seeing an increase in morbidity and mortality. And then over 30 is considered obese. And then after that, you have stage different classes of obesity. I guess the whole point of the body mass index really is it's a very simple number to calculate. I mean, you can even Google body mass index and get a calculator and put your numbers in there. And it will tell you what it is. And that's just the start to at least kind of open up your eyes and say, look, you know, if I'm a little overweight based on this number, maybe I should try to either lose weight or talk to somebody on what I can do to change my lifestyle.
Final comment. Oh, go ahead, please. Go. Continue.
No. The other thing BMI helps us with is to also help us start that screening process of what do we check? Do we check the sugar, cholesterol? Should we be checking more blood pressure? Because if someone's BMI is very high, we probably should be more aggressive in screening them.
Very important. Finally, and then we'll get you out of here. In terms of, we've been telling all your listeners, Dr. G, that know your numbers. How often should these numbers be checked? We've talked about cholesterol, we've talked about glucose, we've talked about blood pressure, we've talked about BMI. So we go and we get these checked, but how often should we continue to do that?
So to break it down kind of quickly, for cholesterol, like I said, we usually start around age 20, just one-time screening. If somebody has a family history of heart disease, or they have diabetes or high blood pressure or a smoker, we can start around age 25 for male, 35 for female to check. If they're a lower risk, we can start around 35 age of male, 45 for female.
Are you then doing it every year once you start?
Oh, I apologize. So again, depending on what those numbers show, if the numbers are normal, then no. So then you can probably do it every three years.
Okay.
After that, but typically, when you get to age 35 for males and 45 for females, in my experience, most of these people have underlying issues like high blood pressure, stage one, or they're a smoker or family history. So then we end up testing more frequently. But again, you have to tailor it to the patient.
Thank you so much.
As far as the sugar,
yeah,
like,
yeah, go ahead.
Sure. Go ahead.
No, you please.
No, I mean, just for the sugar, like I said, we usually start checking in three-year intervals if their BMI over 25. And we can check, like what we talked about earlier, your fasting glucose or A1C. And then for blood pressure, we usually start screening every year over the age of 40. If they have risk factors for high blood pressure, like if they're inactive, they have a poor diet or a lot of alcohol intake, then we can do semi-annually. Typically between age 18 and 39, we'll do every 3 to 5 years to check, but it doesn't hurt to check your blood pressure more often. And what I tell all my patients is get a home blood pressure cuff, check it, you know, twice a week, you know, 1 to 2 times a day, because like I said, most patients don't go to the doctor when they're young until they're just sick or have a cold.
Yeah.
But if you know that your numbers are going up sooner, you can attack it sooner and be a bit more beneficial. And then I usually tell them, if you have that blood pressure cuff, take it to a doctor's office now and then, see if it correlates with what they get in the office, make sure it's functioning appropriately.
Dr. Galley, thank you for a really important visit. So instructive to our listeners, and appreciate your time. A reminder, you can schedule an appointment with Dr. Galley by dialing 609-836-6602. He is seeing patients in Manahawkin. You can also make an appointment with Dr. Galley online at demanddebora.org. Dr. Galley, thank you, sir. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too, sir. Great to be with you.